All right, quick little note before we get started here. So this is part two of episode 43, Time Span. If you haven't listened to part one, I urge you deeply to go and listen to it. It's an awesome episode, and you kind of get the history and background on Eric and how he reached the point he's at now, and it'll make a lot more sense and kind of combine these podcasts into one full story if you listen to part one before you listen to part two. So I urge you, go listen to part one of episode 43, Time Span, before listening to this episode, part two. So without further ado, let's get into it. Growing day by day. That's the way to be. So now we've been talking for almost 30 minutes. It doesn't feel that way, does it?
No.
So now we've reached the present, and we can kind of start going forward. So in your job now, and I remember I was texting you these topics that I thought would kind of be interesting to discuss with just kind of the way you look at things and your experiences. So now being in the hospital in an environment, I remember – it's weird. I distinctly remember my mom doesn't really talk about her work that much with me, I guess because she knows I'm not very interested in it in some ways. But I remember when she started working in the ER, probably maybe around 5-6 years ago, as a nurse practitioner, I can distinctly remember some instances of her coming home and saying like, wow, like what a day type of thing. Mm-hmm. And stories that she overhearing stories that she told my father of, like, you know, I watched someone pass on today, you know, I was there, I felt something, you know. Mm-hmm. And just kind of hearing those stories from afar, I kind of think like, wow, you know, what a career to kind of be in. So now being in the situation that you are now, how do you view life and living and death and things like that, honestly?
Yeah, it makes you appreciative of time. Mm. You know, that's the biggest takeaway from my work in the ER. You know, you do see people pass. You see it, and you see it often. And yeah. You see very sad situations. You see very happy situations.
Right.
And it just sort of puts everything into perspective. You know, that person woke up today, and they had no intention of being here.
Right.
They had no plan of being here. They did not think they were going to be here. You know, and in many cases, I've said to myself, you know, this individual did not think they were going to lose a loved one today.
Right.
Or they did not expect that this would be their last day on this planet. And, you know, we need to take, you know, the time from our busy lives to really tell people that matter to us, they matter to us, and to really pursue your dreams, whether they're creative, whether they're academic, whether they're personal, whatever domain they lie in. Time is the ultimate gift, and no one knows how much of it we have.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I think it's funny because I think the world was kind of hit with that realization a little bit more. One, with the outbreak of the coronavirus overseas. Well, for us overseas, for some it's in their backyard, really. And then also the death of Kobe Bryant like a few weeks ago now. And it's just like you see these immortal figures that you say, this is specifically talking about Kobe, and you see that it was just a random accident. Like, he just passed away in a helicopter crash, and it's like he was 41. Now he hasn't even really reached the halfway point of life yet, I would assume. And someone who has done just about everything you can think is just human at the end of the day, right? Exactly. We forget that, I think. At least I forget that sometimes, I feel.
And we do. We sort of think we're, you know, subconsciously we walk around with this air of,
we'll be here forever.
Yeah, nothing's gonna happen to me. Exactly. Yeah, we're fine. You know, we're fine.
Across the street, don't look both ways. You know,
exactly. I can answer this quick text. You know, while I'm driving. You know, we don't think about that.
Yeah, and it's. I think you and I've talked about this before, that humans are very hard-headed individuals. My phone just nosedive off my leg, but we're very hard-headed individuals in that for us to truly learn a lesson, if you go back through history and you see the advancement of mankind just from a very basic rudimentary civilizations and groups all the way to now where we have full-fledged cities and countries, we have to go through the same learning process over and over again and really beat our heads against the wall to understand certain lessons. And it's interesting that not even now in 2020 we still have so much more growth and development to do as a race, really. I think you see, for you I'm talking about, which is interesting, you see the advancement of I think a race, because you're really looking into medicine and what makes up the human body and what challenges that we have left to overcome. And if you're looking out on the world today through your Eric eyes, what do you see being some of the biggest challenges that are just facing us?
Some of the biggest challenges facing us from a medical perspective, right now, in terms of the medical arena, you know, we're really trying to take advances towards neurodegenerative diseases, working against, you know, these protein misfolding diseases like Alzheimer's, or, you know, some neurogenic disorders like Parkinson's. You know, the race is really on to combat those diseases.
Yeah.
And specifically looking at the role of microglial function in these different pathophysiologies, you know, because if you think about it, it makes sense why we're pursuing that route so heavily, because these diseases are really slowly removing our loved ones from us before our very eyes. You know, someone may not remember that, oh, there's my mother, or there's my son, there's my daughter, you know. And it's,
you know, how ridiculous is that?
it is mind-blowing how, you know, memory, how valuable it is to see something like that take it away. And I think, you know, speaking of time and speaking of, you know, how much more we've become appreciative of time, that's one medically relevant area. Something that's non-medical, but that's a pretty big passion of mine as well, which is, you know, again, keeping with the theme of time, the planet that we have. Because we're living on borrowed time in a sense, but so is the universe and so is the planet.
Right.
And so we need to extend it or take care of it in as much as we can, because the loved ones that precede us, our progeny, you know, we want to leave a space for them where they can enjoy many of the blessings and benefits that we do today.
Yeah.
And if not even some better ones, you know, who knows what the perks of the 22nd century could possibly hold.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because thinking about that, I have these two. So where I live kind of near Limerick, Pennsylvania, and there's a Limerick power plant that's kind of near my house. And it's like, it's like ubiquitous. You can see it from anywhere, like in that area, from like, probably like a good 30 minutes away, like in whatever direction. And I'll just look at it sometimes and I'll just see like the plumes of smoke coming out of the nuclear reactors. And I'll just think, that's killing me slowly.
Yeah, that like, can't be good, right?
I'm like, there's no way that is going to help me out in the long run. And then I'm just like, how can we one, become less dependent on that, and two, find something that's going to be as usable, as viable as that? Because obviously energy sources, wind, solar, like there's a lot of different options. You know, how do we move forward from that? I guess as a business person, and people like me are behind the construction and the maintenance of things like that. So I guess that's a question as much as for me as it is for you. But what do you think about that? What do you think about us becoming less dependent on these energy sources? How does that happen in your view? I have my own view, but I'm curious.
Yeah. Phenomenal question. And it's a question that's being tackled today in politics and advocacy. Me personally, I think we need to start. I think it begins with the research, honestly. The desire needs to be present. And it even extends beyond desire.
Yeah.
I think it really has to do with, oh, snap, like we're slowly destroying the thing that we live on.
That's the hard-headed natures of human, though. We have to get smacked in the face with it a few times. And we're like, all
right,
okay.
You would think all the oil spills that would smack us in the face hard enough, right?
But you would think.
No, I think it comes with an awakening and a realization that, oh, we need to do something about this. And then we need to do research, because research is the pathway to truth. You know, how many discoveries have been made off of research? We have X-ray crystallography. We have the Anfinsen experiment in biochemistry. We have the Griffith's RNS bacteria. You know, all of these pivotal studies have given us knowledge that, you know, have ultimately led to huge discoveries that have advanced mankind.
Right.
And we need that research and we need that funding. So I think what it comes down to is advocacy from our end, putting pressure on local municipalities and even federal governments to make these changes, and then having the funding there. You know, what's really exciting is we just recently, I think even yesterday or 2 days ago, discovered the first organism that does not need oxygen to produce energy. So we have a completely anaerobic species that's out there. How are they getting their energy? Let's research that. If we don't need to burn oxygen to produce energy, whoa, implications are massive.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just coming to sense with what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all need to be in one accord, you know.
Yeah.
Advocates need to continue advocating for green, clean energy, sustainable energy.
Yeah.
And then funding needs to be there from the bigwigs and those in power that, you know, allocate budgets federally, locally. Money needs to be put into these places,
right,
for, you know, the planet to be taken care of in a way that it needs to be.
Right. And, you know, it's funny you say that because, and this is what I mean when I say, I think a creative, I see that creative fervor in you in some way that,
yeah,
it, for you, it starts with research. But in my opinion, I think research, if we're going to go at the start of that, starts with, well, it's the need to solve a problem, but also curiosity. You look, exactly, at something and you think, well, why is this way? All right, well, let me look into this. Right. And then you look a little bit further, then you keep looking, then you just dive deeper in that rabbit hole. And this is actually something that I learned in that ninth grade civics class way back when, that I would come up with an answer to a question and my professor, or at this time just regular teacher, he should have been a professor, honestly. He's just like, no, you got to go a little bit deeper. And I'm like, okay. And then I would find some a new insight that I didn't really see that. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, no, you got to look a little bit further into it. And then he kind of revealed the answer to me. And then I was so like, this is the web that was kind of underlying everything I was looking at. And he's like, yeah, that's why you have to have that drive to know the answer to a problem and to look at a problem from a creative lens, and not just necessarily a more rudimentary classical one.
Yeah.
Very, very important. So moving on, I guess if we continue with this whole time kind of theme, you're someone who has been dedicated, I think, to a way of life and a way of living for a long time now. How old are you, I guess?
I'm 24.
You're 24.
Mm-hmm.
And now, how do you see conviction to a path? You know, how do you kind of dedicate yourself to something for so long without ever, or maybe even if you do get tired of it, but continuing to go down that path and knowing that this is the right way to go? How does that, like, manifest for you?
Yeah, there's definitely moments of, you know, growing tired. You know, the motivation definitely waxes and wanes.
Yeah, right.
You know, but to combat that, I think it comes down to, for me personally, keeping the big picture in mind and doing things that you may not necessarily feel like doing, right? Let's talk about the first thing, you know, sort of keeping the bigger picture in mind.
Yeah.
You know, when your parents, you know, told you not to do something when you were a little kid, and you'd always be like, oh, but why? You know, oftentimes the classic response is, oh, because I told you so, I'm your parent.
Correct.
Right? When you get that, you know, that doesn't really appease, like, the mind of the child. Mm-hmm. The child keeps on wondering.
Oh, it's a curiosity part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's curiosity, right? If you can keep that curiosity in your life, saying, you know, I know I want to get here. I know my end goal is here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's my life going to be like when I'm there? You know, how much change am I going to be able to, you know, affect in the world? Like, how much more of an impact can I make, you know? That sort of gives you, like, little peaks of, you know, motivation.
Yeah.
And that curiosity into how your life would be like and what you're going to be able to do for the betterment of society, you know, that keeps me going. You know, that keeps a little fuel in the tank. And, you know, keeping that big picture in mind to be a physician, you know, but also to be a physician that's passionate about education and equitable access to both education and healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, imagine all of the possibilities, you know, starting from the secondary education level. How can we mentor students, you know, students of color especially, into realizing that, hey, this medicine thing is something I can do.
Yeah.
And here's a living, breathing example of that. That, like, keeping my future in that respect, that keeps me going. The second thing.
Yeah.
Outside of keeping the big picture in mind, doing things that you may not necessarily want to do. That's a little word called discipline. Mm-hmm. It's something that I used
to
really...
It's a skill.
Oh, yeah. It's a big one. I used to really, really have trouble with that because, you know, it doesn't always feel good, you know. But isn't that true of all things that are good for us? You know, working out, going to bed early. Oh, but the party I really want to hit up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the show I wanted to watch. Or
yeah.
These weights don't feel good as you're lifting them. But the benefit of those things really transcends your very transient feelings about what you're doing, you know? And keeping that in mind, in, even though I'm not enjoying this particular action right now or this particular group of actions, me studying, even though I don't want to, it's good for me. You know, it's building up my brain. You know, just as I'm going to the gym and I'm lifting weights when I don't feel like it,
right?
I'm building up my body. It's good for my health. It's the same exact mentality. And similar to the gym, we were speaking about this before.
Yeah.
You know, if you can just get there, it's sort of, you know, you'll do what you need to do. Right. You'll do it because, hey, you're already there.
Right.
So when I don't feel like studying, if I can just get myself in that chair, that isolated environment, get the headphones in, get the book open.
Yeah.
Well, what else is there for me to do? You know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because I kind of took, it's funny, everything you're saying, I'm kind of taking two things from. The first thing I kind of thought back to, I had a an advisor here, Dr. Nichols, that I used to go to just to talk about just different things that were kind of on my mind. And he would often say to me when I was kind of like struggling with something that willpower is like a muscle. Like the more you exercise it, the stronger it becomes, the easier it is. Mm-hmm. So now you, 24 years in, to kind of staying true to this path as best as you can, the level of difficulty you're going to feel at 24 is different from someone who's just embarking at, say, 16, you know? And it's those early parts of it that I think are sometimes difficult to get through. But if you can build that foundation, that infrastructure to continue going and to continue going, it only gets easier. And if you, I guess relating it back to like a sports player, like a Kobe Bryant, you know, hearing about some of the struggles he had, and then you fast forward 10 years and it looks so easy now to him. You thinking you're just like, oh, well, basketball must be a breeze to play, but no, it's actually not. You know, it just takes that time and dedication early, and continuous as well to really have that transformative change. And then secondarily to that, the isolation aspect of it. And I actually just posted on my story yesterday or I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, and I was saying that one thing I've kind of learned recently is that I read this in a book, and I've also just known it to be true in my own life, that when you're truly pursuing a goal or like an end, like finish line, I guess you could say, even if it's not going to be the end goal of your life and it's just a momentary like checkpoint, it's so imperative to have that discipline to say that I have to sacrifice this to get to here. And I have to sometimes isolate myself and be secluded away from some of the things that might distract me to get to this goal. And a lot of times you have or people have a negative view towards you because you made that decision, and they kind of don't understand the goal that you're chasing and the greater vision that you have. But I think that's something that comes with more maturity in a way. And I think you found it in your life, and I think I'm starting to find it as well in mine, that really is necessary.
I think you've characterized it perfectly. You know, it's something that needs to be exercised and developed. Having done it for 24 years at this point, you know, I'm used to the sacrifices and I'm used to the isolation. But it's all part of a necessary process.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that the isolation is not transient. You know, you will study, and then when it's time for you to stop, whether it's 30 minutes, an hour, or whatever you have to do,
right,
once you accomplish that task, you can go back and, you know, take care of yourself and, you know, do what you need to do. But
yeah,
it is something that needs to be developed.
And you know, it's funny because that same book I was reading, actually, it was talking about the like the residual and gradual loss of focus once you're like switching back and forth between a lot of things. So if I'm studying right here, right now, or talking to you, whatever, and I'm constantly like checking my phone or doing X, Y, and Z, when I try to come back to that task, I'm a lot less attached to it. But funny enough, I think this is like talking to you and someone who's actually knows about this, I feel somewhat uncertified. But I was going to say, it's almost like a neurological like process, it feels like, that when you're focused on something, it becomes easier for your brain to continue focusing on it. It's like you have that momentum going forward. Like almost when if you say you had a goal in mind to study for an hour, and then you look at the clock and you study for 2 hours already, and it's like, oh, That was easier than I thought it was. And then exactly. you that thing that you want to do all of a sudden doesn't seem as important. And you just keep on studying anyway. And the next thing you know, you're at 2.5, 3 hours. And I guess that's just goes to show that as you keep going, it gets easier. And then moving on to something else, I was also wondering, when it comes to the expectations you've set for yourself, has there been any that you couldn't live up to in a way? And yet you kind of look back and say, you know, I let that pass me by in a way, an opportunity that you could have capitalized on more, perhaps.
There were a couple opportunities, especially in my collegiate eras, years that passed me by.
Yeah.
That I reflect on, and I used to beat myself up about, you know, there was a program called the Flex Med program with the formerly known Mount Sinai, I believe it's called the Icon School of Medicine now.
Hmm.
And you could apply to medical school early, get in, and then you'd be accepted to medical school as, let's say, a college sophomore. And then you could explore.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? It's a little crazy, right?
I almost spit out my water.
Yeah. And then you can explore different types of academic disciplines that you probably wouldn't have because you take your prereqs, but that's it. You can actually go ahead and take that philosophy class or take that English class or that history class or that Indian Buddhism class, whatever it is. I wanted to do that program, but I did not do it.
Mm.
And, you know, especially when I was at Notre Dame, I looked back in the rough moments, the dark times, you know, where teaching was difficult and, you know, the nights were late. Mm. I said to myself, oh, you should have done that program, Eric. Why didn't you do that program?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a really important thing for everybody to remember.
Yeah.
You know, things happen the way they do for a reason. And now being in the spot that I am now, taking the time to reflect, you know, in that time period, back when I wanted to do that program,
mm-hmm.
if I had done that program and gotten accepted, I would not have gone ahead and done the things that I've done now.
Correct.
And I would not be the person I am today with the perspective that I have today. And I believe that the person I am now with the perspective I have today, you know, the value of time, the value of struggle, the value of being more personable,
mm-hmm.
you know, the value of travel, you know, all of these things that, you know, I have now that I am able to impart to others would not be present were it not for that missed opportunity.
Right.
So while it was a missed opportunity,
mm-hmm.
it definitely was not a lost one in the sense that I found something greater, which is this sense of, you know, time and the sense of, you know, morality. And it has given me even more fervor to pursue my dreams.
Right.
You know, so I'm thankful for it. Definitely a missed, definitely a missed shot, but man.
And, you know, it's interesting how those quote-unquote failures in the moment, they feel that way, are the struggles that you need to mold you into that greater individual a lot of the times. I remember, for me, it was like a dream of basketball that I always kind of had, and then I kind of realized that my skill set wasn't what was going to get you to the NBA or get you to any level of professional play. And then even so, I kind of still pursued it in a way. And when I found photography and I found creative expression and all these different things, in a way I could affect people and I could uplift individuals in a way and inspire them to chase their own creative dreams, I was like, man, if I had been doing this from like 4 years ago, how many people could I have helped? But then I think about it and I say, well, all the lessons that I've learned from failing over and over again, of sticking with something, of teaching yourself, of, you know, not really being as dependent on others and being able to go through that isolation and that those darker times and pull myself out of it myself, that's what had led me here. And that's what allowed me to keep going when there's times that I don't feel like writing or creating something or being an imaginative, inspirational individual. It was worthwhile. And actually, if we're talking about, I guess, the purpose of what I do here in a way, I think that's kind of a good, I guess, in a way, like an end cap to this. So two questions, actually. So what forms of creative expression do you actually enjoy? If you had to say, like, something that you do in your free time or something that you even integrate to your work?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Part of what I do right now in the emergency room is I'm scribing. So it's my job to write what's known as the HPI, you know, the history of present illness. So why the
patient? Yeah, I definitely knew that. Yeah.
So, yeah, right. So commonplace, right? You know, it was such a hard skill to learn, man. The writing, the piecing that together. But what's really helped me with that is the upbringing that I've had.
Yeah.
You know, reading all the time and constantly writing has given me you know, a really good sense of the pen. And I enjoy writing. I enjoy creative writing. Mm. And fun fact, I've been keeping journals ever since I was about 5 years old.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And my first entry was about George W. Bush.
Wow.
Fun fact, yeah. So then I still write the journals today. You know, so that's one
way. Do you do it every day?
Not every day. As I've gotten older and time has become more of a limiting factor, I do it maybe about, I don't know, like 2 to 3 times a week.
I mean, that's still pretty impressive.
It's really interesting, you know, just going back and looking at your life through the lenses of, you know, the different mind frames you're in from, you know, like an infant, like a 5-year-old, up until like your teenage
I didn't get
years.
My cookie today. I'm sad.
Right?
End of entry.
Dear journal, I got in trouble today.
Right, exactly.
Right. And then you flip to like 2014, 15, and then there you are pontificating in your own little personal book about, you know, the greater good. And you know, it's just such a cool thing. I enjoy expressing myself in that way.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because journaling is something I've gotten into later in life myself in the past like few months or so. And then I usually do it at the end of the night after I finish like whatever work I have to do, and I'm like, all right, let me sit down and reflect on the day and kind of to think about things. And in a way, it's so hard to just kind of sit down and just get all of that out. Because I think like, I'll just put it off. I'll do it to tomorrow. And then I keep doing that. And I realize I've written in my journal for like a week or something. I'm like, I'm kind of missing out on that.
Yeah.
And then I'll think back to like, say like classical 17th, 18th century Europe when everyone was writing memoirs and things like that. And I'm like, it's interesting the reflection they were doing back then. You look at that now and you see how they were viewing history as it passed by. And I was like, this is valuable. Like, you should be doing that. Yeah. I think that's a skill, a form of expression that a lot of people should take up. That's a good one. That's a great one.
You're building your own time capsule.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now I'm curious about like the logistics of this now. So do you like write in the same like type of notebook? Have you just like have them stacking up?
Yeah, so you buy like a little, you know, Walmart little journal type situation. And
yeah,
you know, you go from front to end, and that process could take anywhere from, you know, depending on how frequently you write, 6 months to about 2 years.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah. Gotcha. So right now, I currently have 3 notebooks.
Okay.
So the first notebook I call like Triad One.
So that's like I like
from,
that.
Yeah, it's from ages like 5 years old to maybe about like 10 years old.
Okay.
And then Triad 2 is like from 10 to about, you know, 16, 17.
Mm.
And then I'm currently actually ending Triad 3, which is like from 17 to about 25.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So you're right on the kind of the end of that.
Right. And so
that's dope. That's crazy to think about. That is really interesting.
Yeah.
And then my secondary question to that was, So the description for this podcast, I'm not sure if you've read it, but it's basically about detailing the creative successes and failures of people along their life path. Basically, that's what this is more or less about. It always turns into something else other than that, which is a good thing. So with 2020 just kind of kicking off, what were maybe some of your successes and failures in 2019, and then something that you're looking forward to, or a lot of things that you're looking forward to with this new year kind of starting?
Excellent question. 2019 was
new year, new me. Any type of goals?
Oh, man. New year, new me.
I hate seeing those tweets so much.
The memes all over social media. Oh man, no.
This is gonna be the year I become a millionaire.
Right. Same thing every year. Same thing every
You've
year.
You've been saying this since 2007.
Right.
What's been happening?
It's all about that actionable change. You know,
right.
We're laughing and it's funny. But it's all about taking those little actionable steps to make those goals happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so having that mentality in 2019, I just said to myself, you're going to prioritize the things you need to do. Like 2020 is going to be a year of discipline.
Okay.
Because in 2019, I was disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been in this sort of regimen my whole life.
Right.
You know, but 2019, I began to feel somewhat tired, you know? And, you know, you need breaks, you need rest. And so I was taking my breaks and I was taking my rest. But even after I'd taken my rests, I said to myself, oh, this feels good. You know, just sort of sitting here and, you know, easing off of the break a little bit.
Right.
But if you think about your life as a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and journey is just as important as the destination.
Correct.
So we're not rushing it. But if you want to get to the destination, you can't sit in neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I was talking to someone, shout out to Mari Brown. She's a phenomenal human being.
Mm.
She was telling me, she said, you know, you got to put it in drive. You know, you gotta, you know, you're capable. You're more than capable. But it doesn't even have to be large things. Putting it in drive could simply mean take that extra 5 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, and finish up that lecture that you were studying on.
Right.
Take that extra 10 minutes and, you know, copy down those notes, or 10 minutes of review time before bed. Anything that's going to help you get to your goal.
Yeah.
That's putting it in drive.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of been my mentality coming into the 2020, into this new year.
I like that.
Yeah, we're putting it in drive.
That's good. You know? That's perfect for like an Instagram caption too, so I can really use that. I like that.
Go ahead, yeah.
It's funny you say that, because my girlfriend has actually been encouraging me to do like a similar thing, because she's almost like she's like the person I bounce a lot of my ideas off of. And like a lot of the things I'll be excited to do, like she sees the background, success and failure of whatever I'm doing, which is pretty cool to have like a confidant like that. Yeah. And she'll often say to me, like, because for me, I think of things often in the larger scale of things. I think in the bigger view a lot of times. And when I see these, when I don't, if I have a goal I want to reach by X date and I reach it a day after, like that upsets me, you know, like yeah, that really kind of grinds my gears a little bit. And she'll say that, you know, I mean, you did take a step forward, though. You did achieve it in the end. And that's what really matters. And it's kind of understanding that it's definitely a jog, not a sprint, in a way that you kind of just have to keep a consistent pace while you go through this life journey, really. Mm-hmm. So I really identify that with put it in drive in 2020. I like that.
Doesn't mean you're going 100 miles per hour.
No. I mean, unless you want to do
unless
that.
Exactly.
If
by
you
all
can
means.
Keep up that pace,
if
you know, that's
you've got
cool.
the sports car, by all means.
I'm going to stick to the Honda Civic.
Same here.
All right. Well, this has been a very, very fun conversation. I thank you so much for sitting down with me for, let's see, we're at about an hour right now on the dot. Mm-hmm. That's excellent timing. Yeah. Definitely one of the most fun podcasts I've done in a while. It felt great to have another guest or another person on and have a guest and just kind of banter back and forth. That was really fun. Yeah. I'm glad we finally got a chance to do this.
Yeah. A little bit of backstory. We had originally planned to do this about last week, correct?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but the nature of my job, you know, always
he got called
in. Got called in. You got to go in.
Yo, it's funny. I when you were calling me, I was just I know what this is.
I knew you knew what it was too. I knew you already knew what it was.
I was like, because if we were doing this, he would just be like, all right, like looking forward to see you later. Exactly. But I saw the call. I was like, okay. Yeah.
But I'm so glad we were able to, you know, meet up today. It's been an honor to be on. And
thank you.
MuganCast has been, you know, something I've always been listening to since I was put on.
Thank you.
4 or 5 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's an honor. It's a privilege to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode. If you want to connect with Eric in a way, how can they do that?
You can follow me on Instagram at EAD300. Yeah. I check it maybe about, you know, 5 times a week.
Yeah. Kind of keep up with what Eric is doing and the interesting things going on in his life.
Right.
And if you want to connect with me, forever.mugen on Instagram and Tales of Mugen on Twitter, which I never check, but it is there if you'd like to contact me. Or you can check out my website, forevermugen.com, if you want to send me a message directly or kind of see what I've been doing blog post-wise or podcast-wise. And that is episode 43, Time Span. Thank you for listening. That's it.